This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Okay, I know it might come as a big surprise, but not all therapists are evil. In fact, now more than ever, there are accessible, effective ways to work on yourself, whether it's dealing with stress, anxiety, or just getting closer to achieving your goals. That's where BetterHelp Therapy comes in. With access to licensed professional therapy from the comfort of your own space, BetterHelp lets you, and yes, I mean you, make the progress you've always been wanting to make. Its online service is intentionally designed to be extremely accommodating, so no matter the stage of life you're in or where you are in the world, BetterHelp can be a great resource. BetterHelp allows you to set your own preferences, anything from type of therapy to therapist specializations, and they will match you with a therapist that best fits what you're looking for. But don't worry if you don't feel satisfied with the first therapist you're matched with. BetterHelp offers you the option to switch if you don't get that perfect fit on the first try. Want weekly meetings on BetterHelp's secure platform? They got you covered. Looking for the option to message your counselor 24/7? No problem. Whatever you're working towards, BetterHelp can, well, help. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and listeners of The Eyes get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/theeyes. That's betterhelp.com/theeyes. Thank you for listening. Let's get to the show. Somewhere in North America, a man lies in the bed in a large home near the forest. He thinks about things, not to reason or dwell, but to distract himself, to rid himself of his insomnia. It doesn't work. Then, he realizes why. The motion light outside is on. He gets up, out of his bed and out of his thoughts, to look for the disturbance. He rolls the curtain back and sees nothing but the pearlescent green and black of his forest illuminated by the light. He stands there, staring, just watching, until the timer on the motion light turns off. He thinks nothing of it and heads back to bed. He tries to sleep again. This time, however, his thoughts distract him not into sleep, but out of it. What could be lurking around his home at this hour? Certainly not anything dangerous, he reasons, trying to shut out his thoughts once more. This time, he does fall asleep. He wakes not 3 minutes later to the light blaring into his room. He forgot to close the curtain, and the light has turned on again. He stumbles out of his bed, annoyed that his successful attempt to defeat his insomnia has been nullified by the light. Outside, the scene remains exactly the same. It's pretty and eerie, but the man would rather enjoy the scenery of his dreams than the forest he sees only in consciousness. He puts on a robe and stalks downstairs. The house is nice but old, and the wooden stairs creak after each step. The man walks into the living room for the rows of light switches embedded into the wall. With one slightly miffed sweep of a hand, he turns them all off. The motion light instantly turns off too. It won't be bothering him anymore. Each stair creaks again as he walks back to his room, closing the curtains before he gets back into bed. This time, he diverts his thoughts by being angry at whatever woke him up twice. As his eyelids and thoughts close and he begins to drift off, something confounding happens. The light turns on. Impossible, he thinks, now almost furious at the situation. He steps out of bed once more and stammers to the window. He opens the curtains, expecting to see nothing. He's wrong. He looks down and sees a thing standing directly below the window looking up. It holds a flashlight that shines into the man's stunned eyes. The figure looks like a man, has the same shape and form as a man, but its bent, putty-like smile could never possibly form on any normal human face. The man realizes now what has happened, but the figure catches him off guard. It throws the flashlight at the window, shattering the glass into the man's face. He tries to scream, but the confusion of what just happened only allows him to gasp and press on the cuts made by the shattered glass. He screams again, this time for real, and looks back to the figure in his yard. It now stands further from the window, walking back towards the forest, and the man realizes one last thing. The smiling figure's eyes are spinning, darting back and forth like time is sped up somehow. His pupils move faster than humanly possible, accompanying the sloppy smile sculpted onto its face. The man sickens at the sight, and watches as the non-man falls into the line of tall pine trees outlined by the gray of the never-ending sky. I was driving to the station, listening to the news. I don't usually pay attention to current events, but it's nice to catch up every once in a while. The CEO and founder of Anvil Operations was recently removed from his position and sentenced to 15 years under allegations for insider trading, and then I remembered why I don't listen to the radio. Is it just me, or is it always the bad stuff they put on there? And I mean that about the music, too. Who even likes country? Investigations are still underway, but sources say it's a grim outlook for Jim Marcus. The 48-year-old CEO and founder of security giant Anvil Operations was charged for insider trading and deliberately going against it. I mean, seriously. I'm not a half-glass-empty kind of guy, but it feels like you don't hear any good news about anything these days. Especially leaders of big corporations. Who's choosing these guys? I like to think through things. Gets kind of annoying sometimes. It's like I've got OCD for my thoughts or something. When I hear about that kind of thing on the radio, or anywhere really, I feel like I gotta justify it in my mind. Gotta decide what's right or wrong for myself, I guess. It's like filing papers. If I leave all my thoughts undecided, what'll I do when I need to use them? My dad used to say that power was a corrupting influence. It's why he turned down the chief position when they offered it to him at the department. "I don't do my job for the money," he'd say. "I do it for the people." Well, of course he did it to get paid, but I can see where he's coming from. The reason people like me and him do our jobs is to fight that corruption. Like that CEO of the security company. I guess the multi-billion dollar security conglomerate isn't so safe after all. My dad also used to say that it was better to be an outcast than an outcaster. It doesn't quite roll off the tongue, no, but there's definitely some truth to these words. I'm pulling this straight from history class, but once society doesn't benefit a people anymore, it becomes useless. Maybe that's what's happening to us. The big guy crushing the little guys over and over again. Who does that even benefit? As you can see, my moral justification usually ends up in a rabbit hole of rhetorical questions. Do I like that I'm always thinking? Most of the time I don't. But it does come in handy as a detective. My dad was a detective years earlier. Worked with the guy who's now my chief. They did some big things back then. As a 10-year-old kid with a dad in the police force, I thought my dad was made of pure gold. He passed away a couple years ago. Doesn't bother me as much as it did back then. He did some really good things for some good people, and now it's my turn. Most people in the department get bored with this place, leave for New York, and end up crawling back here a year later when the streets are too much for a farm boy cop. But to me, the lack of crime in Almaston only gives you more time to solve a case. And when the chief calls you in for a double homicide, you'll need all the time you can get. "Two bodies found off 28th and Marvin," he said through the comms. "Get here now." I didn't ask him how he knew they were homicides. If it was that evident, I'd probably find out soon enough. I was actually surprised Chief called me in for this case in the first place. I'm still just the assistant detective, and a case as rare as a double homicide in Almaston should be left to the pros. But I'm not just another amateur 20-year-old detective looking for gimme cases. I want what my dad had, the real stuff. I've been asking Chief to make me acting detective if a big case like this turned up for a while now, and I think my pleadings paid off. When I got word they'd found the two bodies, I didn't waste a second. I grabbed my stuff and headed straight for the department. It was going to be a late night. Prosperity Psychological Institute was recently awarded with the annual Mental Health and Well-Being Protection Medal. The institute has taken a conservative approach to psychology, limiting the use of social media and even certain diets. Dr. Isabel Gruff, what do you have to say? Fortunately, the little girl who was injured Halloween night is said to be in rapid recovery, only sustaining nerve loss in her right arm. Fisher has denied the use of any illegal substances in his animals. Nonetheless, his pigs are being transferred to Good Life Dairy and Butcher Plant in Norwich to prevent any other incidents from happening. More on that later. Oh yeah, we got that case last week. A little girl was, like, attacked by a pig at some nearby farm or something. Almost died. Jeez, poor kid. When I got to the station, I headed straight to the chief's office. His office is actually a pain to get to. It's on the third story of a building that's much too big for our small department. Mismanagement of public funding, I guess. I was halfway up the second flight of stairs when I saw the chief coming down the other way. "Meet me in the coroner's office in 5, he said through his cliche gray mustache before I could get a word in. He didn't set anything off, but the way his eyes met me with a dull glare set me off guard. It was like he was annoyed with me, like I wasn't supposed to be there. And I suppose I really wasn't. Like I said, my dad worked with the chief back in the day. They were pretty close, and my dad's death hit him almost as hard as it hit me. Maybe that's why it's been so hard to convince him to give me a bigger case. He wants to protect me or something. I think the only reason he let me into the force this young in the first place was because he knew my dad. But I think I've proven myself enough that he actually sees me as a part of the team now. At least a small part. I don't know how I feel about that. I guess I just don't want to be the guy that got in because his dad died, you know? Maybe it's pride, but I want the people in this force to see me as the detective, not just the kid, you know? I turned back down the stairs to follow the chief, who turned into the hallway on the left, probably to grab some things. I continued straight, and then right, down the hallway to the coroner's office. The smell hit me right as I opened the door. It was like walking into a room filled with rotten, warm bacon. It stung my nose and I gagged when I took an unassuming breath. The air was thick and sour and sweet. I plugged my nose and closed the door. Dr. Klein was wearing a mask and long black gloves and was moving something around on the table. It looked like two long strips of steak or meat or something, with holes pounded into it. There were indents all over them, and they were covered with a sticky, black liquid like syrup. "Where are the bodies?" I asked in a nasally voice, my fingers still pinching my nose. I walked closer, and I realized something terrible. Those piles of meat weren't meat. They were the bodies. They were so stained and gnarled that I could hardly recognize them as human. But as I came closer, I could see that mainly just the legs were mangled and pounded. The chest of the bodies had imprints too. Like someone hit them with their fist really hard. I started to wonder what could have done this to these bodies, and why. Maybe I shouldn't have begged for this case after all. The faces were more or less fine. It was two dark-skinned men with dark brown hair covered in the black syrup. The more I looked at them, the more I realized something. They looked exactly the same. From facial features to skin color to hair length, these two men were the spitting image of each other. Maybe it was just the smell that was getting to me, but I think I recognized them. I did a facial scan of these two men, and they seemed to be quite the duo, Doc said. Carlos and Felix Luna, twins born in Boulder, Colorado. They were brought into our custody before, protesting on private property. They're environmentalists, came to New York to protest the ill treatment of animals on farms, I guess. He looked at his computer. Funny, Usually we record the addresses and residences, but it seems like these two either don't have an address or we forgot to record it. And we never forget to record information, so the only other thing that could have happened is that it was removed, Chief said, now standing in the doorway. Yeah, I don't know, Duck responded. What is this stuff on them? I asked, cringing at the intense sourness of the bodies as I looked closer. To be honest, we're not completely sure. We tested the compounds and it's mostly a corn syrup base, but there are some other components mixed in, including tellurium and selenium. From what we already know, I would guess that somebody made it smell bad on purpose. Tellurium is known for having a lingering sulfuric smell, same with selenium.
Why would anybody do that? Chief said.
Again, we don't know. Why anybody would make this compound is beyond me, and why these men are covered in it baffles me even more. I'll be running some more tests, but this is all we have at the moment.
Keep us posted, Doc. Let's get out of here, Riley, Chief said. I couldn't have agreed more. We walked upstairs to his office. This folder contains everything we know so far, which currently isn't much. We don't have any leads on the last whereabouts of the Luna brothers, other than where they were found on the corner of 28th and Marvin. The brothers were carrying their personal phones, earbuds, and flyers for protests they were running, but nothing in their possession suggests anything towards their address or former whereabouts. It's not going to be easy, Riley. I'm still waiting on a call from Hartford. I really think it might be best for you to tackle something smaller for your first case. He was being protective. He felt like a father to me, and I was like a son to him. With all due respect, Chief, I think I can handle it, I said. Hartford isn't going to be any more willing to send a detective over, and I'm already here. I'm your guy, Chief, and I'm going to solve this case. I arrived at home around 1:40 a.m., and I remembered I'm definitely not a night person. Still, I had one more job to do. The department sends me the mail every week to go through. It's kind of the job for the rookies, since we don't have an archivist or anything like that. This week, Chief told me to leave the stack of letters on his desk instead of bringing them home, but I was so in the habit that I brought them home anyways. I figured sorting through them would at least partially make up for my ignorance. It was a decent stack of mail, mostly bills or advertisements, but there was one envelope that stood out from the rest. It was a white envelope with an odd logo on the front. It was stamped in black ink and depicted an eye, but the pupils were blurred and long, like a cartoon of someone running in slow motion. I opened the odd letter, and inside was a single note. You know what you found on the bodies is wrong. End this now, or more will be hurt. This is not a threat. It's a warning. You will hurt people if you continue with this. Make the right choice. Whoa. This was big. It was talking about something somebody found on the bodies? Was Doc mixed up in something we didn't know about? Was he involved with this case? There was no way to be sure, but I had to be careful. This letter was obviously meant for Doc, not me. I should never have gone through the mail. I had to stay clear of him from then on. As I contemplated the letter, a knock came at the door. It wasn't a regular knock. It sounded padded, like a boxing glove. Hello? No response. I got up and opened the door. I looked up the hallway, but nobody was there. Then I looked down. Sitting on the floor was a white envelope with the same odd insignia on the front. Blurry eyes moving back and forth, up and down. I ripped it open, and inside was an advertisement pamphlet for Prosperity Psychological Institute. It might have just been some random advertising, but it didn't add up. I looked down the hallway again, and absolutely nobody was there. Why would somebody send me a pamphlet for a psych ward and then run away? And what was this logo? Was Prosperity Psychological Institute more than I thought? And how would it be connected to this case at all? My head was killing me, partially from the thinking and partially from the smell in the morgue. I needed to get at least some sleep. I continued the case tomorrow. Hopefully I'd find some leads. The Eyes, an all-new audio mystery. Written, edited, recorded, and composed by Ethan Lex. Follow us on Instagram at @the_eyes_podcast for news and updates. This podcast belongs to Quandary Creative, an all-new collection of the best upcoming podcasts. Thank you for listening.